Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details. This is Conspiranormal.
Welcome to Conspiranormal, everybody. It's your host, Adam. And Sergio.
Hello.
He's busy writing things down. But we're really happy because we're going to do like a really cool, interesting interview with Erica Lukes tonight. And to kind of introduce Erica... Erica is the host of a show called UFO Unclassified, and she is also the former state director of the Utah MUFON. Mm-hmm. Former, we might talk about that while you're the former director too. But we're going to primarily talk about Skinwalker Ranch. But Erica, welcome to Conspiranormal. It's been a long time coming.
I know. I'm excited to be here. This is finally. Like the seas have parted and, you know, I mean, it's the seventh sign of the apocalypse. We're good to go.
Yeah. It's great to have you. I mean, I've kind of followed you for a long time. Mostly just, I know you and Nick Redfern are good friends. And we've had Nick on the show several times, which, you know, we'd love to have him back. So if you can make that happen for us, put in a good word for us. But, I listened to the shows that you did, in 2020 and in 2021 with Steven Snyder, who's a good friend of ours.
The Farm
been on the
podcast.
Show several times, yeah, on the farm.
Love him.
And I know he's been out there to Salt Lake City to visit as well. But you did a couple of really revealing interviews that kind of go around the Skinwalker Ranch subject. And that's primarily what we're going to talk about. But I really want to get your background and how you really got into the study of UFOs and I guess strange phenomenon and all that. And what brought you to it?
I ask that myself that question every day.
Same here.
Why? I go in and look at all my books and think, why, God, did you do this to me? No, I'm kidding. I am, ever since I was a little kid, I mean, I remember being like, what, in second, third grade, and I was in my high school, dear Lord. I was obviously very advanced for a second grader. But I was, you know, in the school library and I picked up a book and it was Dale White Is Something Up There. And it had the, you know, one of the UFO pictures on the cover. And I was just hooked. Like, what is this? This is really strange. And so I went and picked up all these books on Sasquatch and all these things, which I find now, I'm sure if you went into an elementary school, you might not be able to find those. That was kind of an interesting choice. But, you know, I just fell in love with the topic of ghosts, of UFOs, of you know, all of the unexplainable things in life. And as a small child, I had experiences that I thought were, you know, interesting. And then I, in high school, I was reading everything I could on the subject again. And then I lived in what I would call, and other people, many other people that have been to this place, a haunted house. There were some very strange things taking place there for a long time. And then in 2013, I believe, I had a sighting that to me at the time was unexplained. And that got me going. I was with another person and I wanted to know what this was, whether it was mundane, whether it was something paranormal. And so I began doing research on all of the, because I was looking at the Salt Lake Valley and you've got the flight corridor for the international airport. And so I started studying, you know, the flight patterns. I started learning about restricted airspace in Utah, and we have quite a bit of that with Dugway Proving Ground and the NSA and Hill Air Force Base and things. And so I started studying that. I became the state director for Utah MUFON. And then I began just coming out, you know, in public really full force. It's been an interesting opportunity. I resigned from MUFON a few years ago, along with my assistant state director. And I haven't looked back, even though I met a lot of wonderful people, but I'm really glad I can do my own research. And now I am an historian, and I have one of the best archives in the country. So it's been a trip. And then there's the Skinwalker stuff you throw in there.
Yeah.
Which somebody clearly needs to pay for my therapy over that one. But
yeah, we'll get to that. I want to ask you though too about just like what was your relationship with MUFON? I mean, what happened that made you kind of want to leave?
You know, I was one of the few women in MUFON, and a lot of older white men. I mean, great, that's awesome. I think that's 99.9% of the field of ufology. And I started, you know, I wanted to make a difference, and I felt that I could help with the communications department get rid of that stuffy old man image, you know, which is nothing. Some of my best friends are old white men, but right. it's, you know, I thought that we could engage a younger audience. And so I worked under Jan Harzan, doing the newsletters and different things for MUFON headquarters. And I began to meet some resistance from people that were in there in the organization for a long time and were, I think, jealous and petty and sexist and capable of doing some pretty nasty things. And so I started getting a little blowback and ended up resigning. There was a moment where I was speaking with somebody who was in charge of MUFON Radio that made some very, very, very horrific comments to me that very sexist and really nasty. And so I turned to the Jan Harzan to ask if he would step in and be the professional that's leading a nonprofit organization. And clearly that wasn't the way the organization was run. So I decided to resign. And I also had questions about the transparency of the organization. I believe that there might be something interesting going on with some of the taxes, different situations with different chapters. And I also had concerns, as did the woman that was head of Utah MUFON before me, Elaine Douglas, about where data was going. So you're entering in, you know, all your personal data, your, you know, I mean, things that I would say you would hope that MUFON would be sensitive with, but then you find out that they're buying and selling data to the highest bidder, namely Robert Bigelow. Right. And to me, that was alarming. What is he doing with my data? And so I started asking questions about that. And I think the blowback intensified. And so eventually I just said, oh, have fun, guys. Peace out.
It's interesting, Erica, because like the two people that I've known that are MUFON directors have been women. Angelia Scheer, who sadly left us at the beginning of last year. She was actually the director for Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And I also know Jennifer Stein, who is the director in, I don't think she's a state director, but she has her own kind of like MUFON, I guess, subgroup in Philadelphia. So both of them are women. And, but I can see how it would have been a kind of toxic atmosphere, especially with, I can't remember his name now, but the one that made all the racist comments on
John Ventry.
Yeah, well, Ventry.
And I have to say, I have to wonder, it's like when the women in MUFON knew that this was taking place with me, especially some of the old guard, you know, I specifically reached out to several of them and asked them for help. And none of them did a thing. And so, really? Way to go. Let's stick up for women. Yay.
Yeah.
So I found that very, very unimpressive. And not specifically Angela, because I never had any contact with her. And I've heard that she was really, really cool. Amazing.
She was really great. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, she was a great person. Absolutely. And then last year, it was 2020. See, everything's like mixed up in my mind from the last 2 years. But Jan Harzan, then he got, you know, caught with, what was he, talking to underage girls or something? It was like, I remember when that happened, we actually did a show right the day that happened or the day that it broke. And so that was a big stink. And I haven't heard really anything else about that since that happened.
No, that was pretty hushed up, I think. And you know, when you look at Jan and his career, I mean, he was pretty high up in IBM and had pretty high role in contracts. And so I would imagine, yeah, there would be a need to keep things a little bit quiet about that. And I also, I find that interesting. And then the takeover with Dave McDonald, or, you know, I mean, he's stepping back in as the executive director and he owns a Sex Mile High Club. Woohoo.
Really?
Seems like a,
Nevada or?
I think he is in Nevada now. Yeah. But so Flamingo Air. Yeah. So that's an interesting choice to have someone step in.
It seems like a real boys club kind of thing. Good old boys, really, is what you can really call it.
And hopefully, I think there is some hope that a lot of that's changing in the subculture in general. But do you think just the marginality and the at least the pretense of like dealing in secrets and things like this kind of leads to this isolation that kind of festers and breeds abuse and things like that?
You know, I think that I think when there's not a lot of transparency and, you know, when there aren't people in the subject that have ethics and, you know, integrity, then you're going to see the kind of abusive behavior. And, you know, to be honest, I mean, the same people that have been involved in this and have turned a blind eye to some of the malfeasance in the subject for decades are still running the show. So in my opinion, nothing's changing. I mean, we can have a fresh new face, Colonel Sanders and company, that's out there promoting stuff and, you know, go Patriots. Yeah, baby. You know, and all that stuff. And it's like, okay, nothing's changing. It's sad. I want things to change. And I see some really neat women coming into the subject and I see them getting tangled up with the same people. Mm-hmm. That I've had experiences with. And I think I'll be here for support when they finally figure out things are rotten in Denmark. And that's all I can do.
I mean, things have their place in history, but do you think MUFON has really just kind of outlived its usefulness?
You know what? I think that it will always be like a, you know, a fun thing for certain people, a way for some chapters to make money. I think it'll be a way for them to collect data. I don't know if that's going anywhere. And I just want to say that I have, you know, I'm friends with somebody on the board of directors who's been on my show. And there are people that I do really, really like in the organization. I wonder, you know, I mean, it's interesting, but I think that MUFON at the end of the day, has outgrown its potential. I think now with social media and so many different, you know, Facebook groups and Twitter, you know, things that are going up, it's like people aren't reporting to places like MUFON any longer. They're putting their things on Facebook, which at the end of the day, that could be worse than putting it in the MUFON database. So,
yeah. And the thing about MUFON is that from what I've kind of, just my kind of cursory, just like experience with it, I've gone to a couple of meetings and it's like, it seems like a very loose group. So like the person that, you know, heads each state or each section or whatever can kind of decide what they want to do. And that's kind of how I felt like Angelia and Jennifer did theirs, you know, but the problem I think with MUFON is that it became like the only game in town. Especially like, I mean, we talked with Jack Brewer last year, the end of last year, about NICAP and all that. I mean, there was NICAP and there was another one and there was MUFON. And then the other two just went away and MUFON just became the only one that kind of just held all the cards for a good long time.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it's like I said, I've got friends. In fact, I spoke for Minnesota MUFON a few months ago. And I love them. There's some really neat people in that chapter. And I think it is it's a great way to meet like-minded people. But with that said, there are chapters that have state directors and leadership that are promoting ideas that are very questionable, in my opinion. I mean, you've got a lot of this kind of, you know, we're throwing religion into the mix. We're throwing white supremacy into the mix. We're throwing all of these ideas that at the end of the day, really is not helping with the scientific study of the phenomenon. And I think if you're going to go, you know, I mean, kind of under that, that's your slogan for the benefit of mankind. Maybe they should think about changing that to humankind. I'm just saying, but it's like, you just, you know, it's you, and this is a science-based organization.
Yeah.
There might be some issues with that.
Well, like an individual group is probably fine, but like on a national level, their leadership just sucks. And the big thing became in like 2017. And I remember this like really well, was when they embraced like Corey Good and Jay-Z Knight. And I mean, I can remember being in Roswell. I was in Roswell in 2017, and we were all sitting around. It was like Peter Robbins was talking to this guy, and who was like a director of some MUFON group. And he actually was so discouraged after he talked about MUFON that he threw his ring or whatever, or his membership card, into the trash, like literally in the restaurant.
Dramatic moment. Done with you. Off with the ring.
So it was like 2017 was like a big moment for them, because, you know, I mean, just embracing really what is just total just lunacy, like Corey Good and Jay-Z Knight. And I mean, Jay-Z Knight, I mean, Steven can tell you there's like a lot of weird connections with that stuff too.
Oh, I'd be interested to, you know, learn more about that. I mean, it is incredibly disturbing. But and she was a big donor for a long time, and I think when that came out, that was hushed up. So
Yeah, there's some pretty right wing just stuff that goes on with the whole Romptha.
Well, and there's always been that current in ufology going back, you know.
Any paranormal thing. Any paranormal thing, there's always right wing.
But this time right now in particular, you know, everyone seems to be coming out of the woodwork and networking around this paranormal stuff. Ufology is like seems to be really, really blown up.
It is an interesting time. And I think now more than ever, it's kind of ufology, like the rest of the country or the world, is they're showing their hand. And what, you know, what is that? Well, it's a movement full of white supremacists. It goes back, you know, decade after decade, and people with political agendas and religious, you know, agendas. And I think there's really at the end of the day, what are you left with when you get through some of this stuff? It's used, the UFO field is used for people's, you know, ulterior motives. And I think that, you know, Robert Bigelow is top on the list of using the subject for his own personal gain and to sway people into perhaps a way of thinking that isn't my way of thinking. But
well, let's get into that. Let's get into the Skinwalker Ranch. So how did you become involved in the Skinwalker Ranch, I guess, saga?
Oh, God. You know, I mean, first of all, I'm lucky enough to live in Utah. And so, you know, for me, it was like, okay, I'm, you know, an hour and a half away from this, you know, magical place where shape-shifting werewolves stand on ridge tops and, you know, do backflips, and there are little rhino frogs and dinosaur beavers floating around and different things. And I mean, I
haven't heard about this. The rhino frogs and
dinosaur beavers.
I've heard of the dire wolves.
Yeah. Dino beaver. Oh my God. I mean, where to go? With the dino beaver, where do you...
We're using that headline to advertise the show.
No. Sure. But it's that's in the new book, Pentagon, or Skinwalkers at the Pentagon. And so another, Nick Kelleher, Knapp, and, you know, Co., their new shtick.
With really excellent graphic design. I just want to say that for the cover.
I know. I feel bad. I'm sure somebody did work hard on that. But it's, if you're trying to have a realistic book with people that are scientifically studying the phenomenon and are engaged in high level politics and things, well, it might not be the cover I'd pick. But anyway, so I got involved in it, you know, I mean, gosh, what, 15, 20 years ago, like a lot of other people. And I began reading about it. And then I began kind of going to different meetings around here and meeting different people that were giving me information. I think I made my first trip out there maybe 10, 12 years ago. And then I started, you know, actively finding people in the area that I could interview over a period of time. And so I found different families that I would conduct initial interviews with and then go back, you know, in a year and keep track of how things were progressing and what was taking place in the area. And I also was fortunate enough to interview Junior Hicks and speak with him over the years, and also Dr. Frank Salisbury, who wrote the Utah UFO Display, which really was kind of the foundation, that book, taking Junior's works, that was the foundation for some of the mythology that, you know, Bigelow and crew turned into Skinwalker Ranch and their little empire. And so that was interesting. Dr. Frank Salisbury was a professor here, and he was very highly regarded. His holdings are at the University of Utah Special Archives, and so I spent many days up there going through that and looking at his life's work and his correspondence with regard to UFOs and some of the things that he was involved with NASA. He was also involved with NASA. And so it was just, it's been fascinating. Towards the end of his life, I had the pleasure of talking with him again. And he told me, when I asked him about Skinwalker Ranch, he said it was mostly garbage. And that a lot of things had been taken and used and they weren't factual. It wasn't factual. And I think to him, being a scientist, that was not in, he didn't have a lot of regard for that. And I also, you know, spoke with Junior towards the end of his, I mean, I think maybe a few months before he passed away. And he also, even though he was more of a believer and had taken on some of the things that were fed to him through the Bigelow crowd, he also didn't have, in my opinion, a lot of respect for Bigelow and things. And I think that he knew that there was something going on that wasn't on the up and up. And specifically, you know, you hear the story about in the Skinwalker book about the wires being cut and how that was a paranormal occurrence. Well, Junior said, I've got it on record that that absolutely wasn't, that the lines had been cut by another human. So, you know, I start going through all this and then putting the pieces together and then pulling up different things on individuals involved. And it's like, something just doesn't seem right here, and it's not right there. And so I think it's used as entertainment. It's used to drive tourism to the area now, as we've seen with funding that has been allocated to construct new recreation centers and places where they can hold UFO conferences and things. And so they are putting money back into the economy in the area, and people involved in the new Skinwalker Ranch are involved with economic development for the governor of Utah. So makes sense.
Can we talk a little bit about the history of the Skinwalker Ranch and like how it's changed hands and Robert Bigelow's influence and what was going on there?
Yeah. So the Garth Myers was the last owner to own that and have charge of the property before the Shermans bought it and had that and then signed an NDA. I had heard the rumor was, and there are several different rumors, that they were maybe upside down on the loan for the property. And then Bigelow came in and offered them a deal and made them sign NDAs. And so you have then Linda Moulton Howe and crew stepping in to create a narrative potentially. And maybe the Shermans did actually, I'm sure that they felt that they'd experienced things, but how much was that manipulated at the end of the day and for what gain for this handful of people, you know, Linda Moulton Howe, Kelleher, you know, all of these people to make money. What were the real estate interests? What was going on in the community? You know, I would love to figure out what Bigelow did in the community. I had heard Junior told me that he was on the board for Zions Bank in the area. and I need to confirm that, which is interesting. So you've got a lot of other business dealings going on above Skinwalker Ranch. And so that was very interesting, you know, over the years, I think. But interestingly enough, there's been a lot of statements made by the new ownership of the ranch and some low-hanging fruit about the Myers family, saying that because the Myers have gone on record, Garth specifically saying that there was absolutely no paranormal goings-ons at the ranch. Mm-hmm. And so people are now accusing a dead man of lying, which I think is a pretty low blow. I actually, interestingly enough, Garth Myers was my bishop. And I will say he was one of the most honest, kind, highly regarded people in our community. He was a great person in my adolescence. I really had and have a lot of respect for their family. And so for me to see another businessman in Utah saying these awful things about somebody who's passed away is, Garth Myers was a bishop. He was a proud member of the Mormon community. I think it's, I don't think that's very respectful. So that's my spiel.
At what point did the name Skinwalker Ranch get coined, and do you know by whom?
I'm sure it was Knapp and Kelleher, who had the big breakout book and things. I know that Zach Van Eck for the Deseret News wrote the initial couple articles highlighting the strange paranormal activity at Skinwalker Ranch, and that put the Shermans in the news, and it put the ranch on the news. And then from there, Bigelow came in and bought the property, and then the Skinwalker myth was born. And I have to say, this is Ute land. And it's not Navajo.
Yeah, exactly.
So there. I think a lot of people in that area are just like, what? Where did that come about? And how did that even happen? And you've got Skinwalker Ridge. And okay. So I think there are a lot of holes in the story when you start looking at it.
And just I don't know how much pull it could have without that. I think the name is just enigmatic, and the name does more than anything, I think. People hear that, they're so fascinated by these, a real loose understanding that they usually have of actual Skinwalker legends from the Dene people. And, they just struck gold with the name, I feel like. Without that name, I don't know how, it's like, it's excellent branding. That's all I can say.
It is. And to me, it's like the more I had several meetings with a fellow who was one of the country's foremost, world's foremost historians of the Native American, culture. And I mean, it was just like the Skinwalker thing. I mean, first of all, the Navajo, you don't talk about Skinwalkers. They don't like to talk about it.
Yeah,
they
it's feel pretty it taboo. Brings,
yeah. And so here we are, disrespectfully naming a ranch after something that's a taboo subject. I mean, how many ways can we disrespect people?
The wrong tribe, and then something that's like pretty taboo on top of that.
Right. So interesting stuff, but nobody asked these questions.
Well, you touched on you have background in the LDS church.
Mm-hmm.
What role does the LDS playing all this? I mean, I have some family background in it. They were mostly RLDS, now known as Community of Christ. But do you think that the LDS church kind of predisposes people to more of a mystical worldview or openness to subjects like this?
No, I don't.
No?
I mean, which is interesting because I went to church up until a point, and then for me it just wasn't the right fit for my beliefs and thoughts on the world. But I don't think it was necessarily a mystical thing. I don't think they talked about like the paranormal and things. I mean, other than Joseph Smith, and his scrying stone. I mean, not that they really mentioned that, but anyway, different things like that. So, but I think what it is maybe a place where now you can insert these ideas and perhaps have a political agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's more the focus of things, and make business deals and things. So, but
okay. Just more practical, kind of like a cohesion that allows you to do more.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think you go into, I never went into church and heard about UFOs or things like that. In fact, I think it was kind of taboo to talk about the paranormal and things, you know, so, but it is interesting though, the Mormon businessmen do love the paranormal topic.
Yeah. And I want to definitely get to what's going on there now, but Robert Bigelow gets in there, and I believe that's about 1996 is when he bought, it was from the Shermans. And is that the real name? Because I know that there was like I can't remember.
The Gormans. They were called the Gormans.
Yeah, the Gormans in the book. Yeah.
Okay. So it's, okay. Yeah, Gwen and Terry Sherman.
Yeah. And so Bigelow gets in there and brings in NIDS, I guess the National Institute of Discovery Sciences. And they do a lot of stuff there. And I have no doubt that NIDS was there. But the question is, what exactly was NIDS really doing? And what exactly was probably going on the ranch? And what are your thoughts on what could have really been happening there?
Not much. I think that from what I have learned and the people I've interviewed that worked on the ranch and different things, I mean, there wasn't good equipment. They certainly weren't out there conducting any sort of serious study. They were, sending a guy out with a Ouija board and you know, don't get me started on that. I mean, which is great. I mean, got to play with the Ouija board at Skinwalker Ranch. But I mean, it's like you go out and you're not serious about studying this. And then you use the excuse, oh, the cameras got cut. Well, that seems like that's perfect. It's perfect. Then you don't have any accountability.
Not for lack of budget too, all this, right?
Right. So, you know, what happened with that? I don't... You know, again, it's like here you've got this mystical, magical place where all these portals are opening up, and then you've got, you know, you go there and it's like it is not secure. You know, you've got people that are getting hit with radiation, and well, you would think there'd be somebody there maybe checking any of these things out. Lots of questions that you have. Where is the equipment? What are they doing? Why aren't they transparent with the public as they claimed they were going to be with the new ownership and things, and that they would have live, you know, streaming videos of the ranch? And, you know, that really hasn't come to pass, but I guess we get that information on the TV show. So I guess that works for some people.
So I know listening to your interviews on the farm, I feel like Stephen like hardly left any questions for us, but he mentioned that it was like a big haunted house, and I was thinking more of like it's a big seance parlor.
I think so. I mean, but I, you know, again, when Bigelow was there, especially during the Bass days, I mean, there was one or two security guards there. They weren't doing anything. You know, the camera equipment. In fact, I think somewhere over here I have one of the cameras. Oh, here it is. Hang on, it's back there. So that's a like $15 camera that was at Skinwalker Ranch with that private property sign that somebody shot gun holes in. But so that security camera weighs about, a pound. And there's no meat to that was just a fake security camera that was installed at the ranch.
So it was just there just as like, just to make you think that there were security cameras.
Right. And, you know, even when I interviewed Dr. Eric Davis, when we were still speaking, he said that Bigelow was very cheap and didn't give them any equipment to go out and actually measure anything or do anything productive. So I think that's pretty telling. But that's just me. That's $22 million of your taxpayer money.
Yeah.
Study the paranormal.
Right, because he got money from the government. I guess Harry Reid helped him get money to that went in, and part of that went into investigating Skinwalker.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
There's something about it too that's just so like it's so classic and old school, like using newspaper articles and things like that. I mean, that's like, it worked, but that's cheap. I mean, it's just, it's crazy how this mythology was created in just such a classic way.
Oh, it very classic. And I mean, it is interesting because, like I said, you know, I mean, I went, you know, I looked at Dr. Salisbury's research. You know, I've talked to many, many people over the years and three generations of families that have had experiences. I don't know what they've experienced. I don't know if some people are just getting caught up in the hype, you know, and maybe they did that back in, you know, the 60s and 70s and things, but it's interesting there. I think there definitely could be something there, but I don't think that something is being actively or was ever actively studied at the ranch. And I think that perhaps they've used some of that, you know, because I think people, like you had mentioned that, you know, before we even got on the show, that people are seeing things all over the world. And so it's not necessarily location specific. And so I don't know. I think there is something unusual going on, and there's lots of fabulous lore and cool things that have happened in that region. And it's a fascinating area, but it's not, I think the Uinta Basin is fascinating. I don't necessarily think Skinwalker Ranch is anymore, but
it, in and of itself. Yeah. And I mean, we talked about, like, I mean, if you look at the Wikipedia page, they actually list out the ownership from 1934 on. And Bigelow did own it for 20 years. So I guess was there the initial, you know, let's go in and investigate whatever, or half-ass investigate or whatever they were doing. And then I guess it just kind of sat there for the rest of the time.
I mean, it did, but then you have, you know, the Bass days with the money that was allocated, the $22 million, you know, 2010, I'm trying to remember when that contract started because I'm a little brain dead this evening, but, you know, you have that kind of period. But I think that, you know, he always had people there, caretakers of the ranch and a security guard or two hiding in the bushes in their ghillie suits, putting makeup on and popping out at people and
thinking they were Rambo.
Clearly
boys like to play dress up.
Oh my Lord. Well, someday there's some good footage of that. Clearly scientific.
Well, this is the thing that we've been talking amongst ourselves, is that we've been wondering whether or not they were testing things out there, maybe like weapons testing. And because I know Bigelow is, I mean, I really think that Bigelow, I think his big thing is he is one of these guys like Elon Musk, right? I mean, he's like Elon Musk before Elon Musk.
In his mind,
yeah. But, you know, he is kind of part of the military-industrial complex. And I really think a lot of this push for UFOs, the UAP, and all this stuff that's going on right now, I've really felt that like it's a way to kind of just justify weaponization of space. And I think Bigelow, I think he's a part of that. And do you think, could they have been testing things out there? Was there like almost like a mind control kind of thing going on out there? Or like
something going on? My God. Yeah. Certainly scrambled one brain I know of, but I think.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that for sure. But
I mean, I definitely think, because you look at Utah and you look at the fact that we have, you know, one of the largest concentrations of aerospace and defense contractors in the country. Yeah. And that is, you know, that is growing exponentially thanks to, you know, the new steward of the ranch, Brendan Fugel, who's a mogul in the real estate industry. He's done a lot for the economic development of Utah, and there's no doubt about that. And so you have people that could potentially be testing things in that area for sure. I mean, I absolutely think that would be a possibility. I mean, what a perfect testing ground.
And that's what the allocation for that money to Bigelow Aerospace was, right? For to study the effects of UAP. Isn't that it? The
official? Well, I don't think there was, well, that's what they say, UAP, give me a break. But they did, you know, one of the things that they were testing was RF and do weapons. You know, that was mm-hmm. in the solicitation sheet, and effects on human tissue and things. So I don't know. They can, they could dress it up however they want, but they certainly.
So it seems like a good blanket for weapons testing, because you can use the, paranormal effects and things like that as cover for things you're actually like doing to people with devices, possibly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that, we've seen with the Havana syndrome and different things that have been leaked out, that some of the weapons that we have and have had in our arsenal for a long time, are there producing the same effects that you would get, or you would think you would get, if you were going into a haunted house or having a UFO experience, where you get, the tingling and you're disoriented and you get nauseous and things like that, or you could, perhaps it could induce feelings of euphoria. I think that, it is interesting. And I think that we know so little about what we have available in our arsenal, which I guess that's important to keep up with the other countries and things, but mm-hmm. How deep did it go in when they were using UFOs or parapsychology as a cover?
Right. That's what we kind of wonder, because I mean, like, infrasound in and of itself will make you feel weird.
Right.
I mean, and that's something that's not unusual to do, or weird really to do. And I likened it to, you're familiar with the Ken Thomas book, The Octopus, that, there were things that were going on, weapons testing and stuff that were going on the Cabazon Indian Reservation in California, that, they could get away with because they were on basically tribal land. And I feel like, Bigelow just owning this massive amount of property, you got to think about the scale. Well, we are, we're more populated than out there. But out there, it's like, there's a lot more acreage involved. So you could probably get away with a lot more of that stuff out there than you could here.
Right. Absolutely. So, and it was interesting, too, because a lot of people that lived around the ranch were on Bigelow's payroll.
Yeah.
So, and some of them died from, I interviewed Charles Wynn's granddaughter, and who's, I just really think the world of, but she talked about after that her grandfather really hadn't seen anything. He lived on the neighboring property before the Bigelow days. And then he was out one night working on the irrigation ditch, and a bright ball of light came over him, and he was so worried about him. He thought he was going to get burned. And so he kind of dove into the irrigation ditch, and then developed, cancer later. And whether there was really a cause and effect there, it was certainly something that concerned her. But so it's interesting. And with that said, I think there's also a lot of, you've got a lot of stuff going on, drilling, a lot of things in the environment that could potentially mm-hmm. cause some health issues, definitely. And I don't know if you heard there, a few years back, there was a Rolling Stone article about a series of stillbirths that were born in Vernal, Utah, and how they were looking into it, and how one nurse was, delivering, or midwife was delivering these children. And she, I think, got a lot of blowback for questioning what was happening, in the environment and to these children, which is really sad. So I think there's a lot going on in that area. But
I'm curious though too about like the purpose of the propagation of the myth that has become Skinwalker Ranch. And I'll read this here in just a second about like kind of like the charter and all that stuff and why it's being propagated now. But when Kelleher and Knapp wrote their book, and I think that came out about 2005. What the purpose of kind of propagating that was it for entertainment purposes, or is it more a smokescreen?
I think it's probably both. It is really funny that this was supposed to be a top secret place. Nobody was supposed to know about it. And yet here we are writing a book about it. I mean, come on. It's like, there's so many questions when you step back and, you know, put your, you know, big girl pants on and look at things rationally. It's like, okay, I cannot believe, like I step back and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I actually fell for this. I mean, it was a fun thing. And I wish that I still believed in it, because it would be a lot easier road than I've traveled on. You know, these are pretty serious people. And I definitely think, you know, there's probably been some blowback from me talking out about it, but you know, I think it's made money in the entertainment. It's helped also, you know, with Bigelow buying the MUFON database. I mean, was there a potential that he's taking somebody's psychological profile and figuring out weaknesses or places to perhaps manipulate people? And could that be potentially something that would be used with a Cambridge Analytica type of thing that could eventually turn into something like the QAnon cult? You know, I think that that's, you know, we know that mining data can be used to do a lot of things. And so could that have been something that you could use and manipulate people? I think there are a lot of big implications.
I know it's not the MUFON methods, but was there information in that from hypnotic inductions and regressions?
You know what? He did initially buy John Carpenter, who was an abduction researcher and you know, did all sorts of things in that vein and things. And so he bought Carpenter's work, and then he ended up buying the database and things. So
I mean, talk about, like you're saying, this like psychologically compromising stuff. Like,
right. And then, you know, you could do religious studies. I know that there was a religious study done. I have that in my archive by John Alexander's wife to poll people to see what, you know, if there was a UFO or an alien encounter, how would people in religious positions, how would they deal with that? You know, so I think there's a lot more stuff going on behind the scenes as far as maybe manipulating our country for gain, political gain. I don't know. Makes sense to me, but, and I know people will go, that is such a conspiracy theory. Well, whatever.
Well, I mean, it's been going on. I mean, you mentioned Cambridge Analytica. I mean, that's exactly what they did. And that's exactly what keeps happening through the use of social media.
Yeah. And even without some like overarching conspiracy, this stuff is profitable to people. And, you know, no one's going to doubt that, you know, companies and entities are going to do things that are unethical for profit.
Right. I mean, I think the paranormal stuff is fascinating. It's like, you've got people who are, you know, putting in their, you know, I think I saw something and I'm having this experience, and how do we manipulate vulnerabilities? How do we, you know, push people down a rabbit hole so we can observe their behavior? And, you know, I have to wonder if some of the groups involved in ufology over the decades haven't been doing that and studying the abduction phenomena for a reason, you know. And how does that link potentially with MK Ultra? You know, you've got the connections with Dr. Hal Puthoff and the early days the SRI and funding. And then you also have the connection to Sidney Gottlieb, who, you know, was involved with MK Ultra and things. And so what was the motivation there?
I want to read real quick. This is the trademark details for Skinwalker Ranch. And I mean, since Brandon Fugel has taken it over, I mean, first of all, we didn't even know who he was. I mean, in the Skinwalker Ranch documentary that Jeremy Corbell.
You know, I bathe in holy water frequently to try to forget that name, but you know.
That they took Robbie Williams out there and all that stuff. Well,
yes, because there's nothing better than, you know, men sitting around drinking beer and smoking and getting the crotch shot, you know, here and there.
Oh, no.
I mean, I'm telling you, that 10 minutes, I cannot get that back, and I cannot get that image out of my mind. It was...
In that documentary... They put him in they put him in shadow and all that, and they didn't want people to know who he was. And now he has, I mean, I guess since 2019, I think he's come out and said, "Oh yeah, it's me, and I own it." And and all this type of thing. And he has, there's the TV show that I think it's in its second season now. I don't know.
I think it'll be the third season will start pretty quick.
How could they find third? I mean, how can you get material? I don't know.
It's a seance parlor.
But I watch it. I watch it. Like, I mean, granted, if you could have a camera sitting here watching me watching Skinwalker Ranch.
Is it called hate watching? Is that what they call it?
You know what? I don't know what it's called. It's just called, I don't know. It's cathartic for me. I can yell at the TV screen and, you know, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it is entertaining in a strange way and things. And so, I don't know. I mean, I think Brandon's a very nice, gracious man. He's always been that way to me. And I appreciate that. I think that, you know, but as I have, you know, I mean, I question things. I think I had him on my radio show, my podcast, oh my gosh, maybe a year and a half ago. And, you know, that's probably the last time I'll have him on. I don't think he'll come back, but, you know, because I have questioned things, but he's always very gracious. And, you know, I think that he's an incredible businessman. He's very shrewd. He's not where he is because he hasn't worked really, really hard. And he does have a reputation in the community for being, you know, very, a very hard worker and doing some great business deals to stimulate economic growth in Utah. So.
And I think that's part of what he's doing with this, because when you read this, this is the trademark details. And just to kind of go over this briefly, I think it's interesting that the attorney who, I guess, filed this is named Brick Power. That does not seem like a real name to me, but goods and services, providing recreation facilities, entertainment services, namely creation, development, production, and distribution of multimedia content, internet content, motion pictures, and television shows, classification information, international class, education, providing of training, entertainment, sporting and cultural activities, education, providing of training, entertainment, sporting and cultural activities. So, I mean, in the kind of charter for the trademark of the name Skinwalker Ranch and the place, it clearly says that it is for entertainment purposes and for multimedia production.
Right. Just like the solicitation sheet for OSAP. You know, I mean, states very clearly that it's not doing anything to do with studying UAP. So, but again, these are questions that people seem to, you know, gloss over, except for people like you who are asking questions about that. And at the end of the day, it's like, okay, that's great. I mean, that's in business, you are stimulating that area economically and bringing in business to people. And things, and I understand that, you know, from a business perspective, I think that's important. But is this what it appears to be? You know, I don't really think so. And how many people in the process of that are being led down, you know, a road of thinking that things are taking place that aren't? I mean, how healthy is that for people? And sometimes I get on some of these Facebook pages and I see people just, oh, I'm looking at this chemtrail and oh my gosh, it's over the ranch and it's, you know, there's something magical. And it's just, they think, oh Lord, we need to step back here a little bit and be rational about some of these things. I know it's exciting, you know, and you get that thought in your mind that something's going to happen and you can perhaps make things happen because you believe so much. The power of belief is an amazing thing. But
I think on some level, to some people, I'm not saying necessarily to the current operators of the ranch, but there is the idea that people gain power through the hoodwink. You know, maybe that's just what's going on, because really, if he's already this real estate mogul or anyone else involved, I mean, is this really that profitable compared to other stuff they're involved with? So what is really the goal, you know? It's probably, is it power in some other way besides just purely monetary?
I think, you know, that's, so yeah, power, money, it's a good thing.
Yeah, ultimately, I think it really just kind of comes back to that in a lot of ways. I think that Brandon Fugel, for whatever other good intentions he may have, I think he does see this as a monetary venture.
He would have to. He's a businessman. He's very adept. He would absolutely have to see that. I mean, right. I don't think it's for the love of just having something fun. I think there's there's definitely something. And like I said, he and people that that he knows, I mean, they have done a great deal to stimulate economic growth in the area. So
a place where people can go to like these UFO conventions there, and I mean, UFO conventions, I mean, it's big money.
Well, it could be, I'm not sure. I think it was interesting. They had just built a really beautiful recreation center up there with, new money that has come in to Utah and things. And so they did have the UFO conference there. So I'm sure. And then when I go out there every few months and things, and you do see new things popping up, new places where you can go buy, things and get, have a starseed read your future or different things. So I think there will be a little new age community popping up there pretty quick. And, honestly, it's if you ever get the chance to go there, it's definitely interesting.
Maybe this is like maybe it's a foundation myth for the economic development of the entire area that, maybe this area will turn into something. A lot of places start with that. Last time I was in Florida in the St. Petersburg area, I started digging into like local history and Treasure Island there was started by a bunch of businessmen who created a hotel, and they wanted to find a way to get people to come to the hotel and purchase land. So they came up with this big pirate myth of Gasparilla, and there's buried treasure somewhere out there. And like, sure enough, it led to big economic development. And same happened in like Mobile and New Orleans with the birth of the Mardi Gras cruise and that same kind of mythologizing and as an economic engine to get people to get on the railways to come down to Mardi Gras. And it's kind of like just pretty American thing.
Oh, I love New Orleans though. That's one of my favorite places on the planet. There's nothing like going on a tour from the Voodoo Museum hosts, and you can go around with Bloody Mary and hear all the stories about New Orleans. I love it. And I went over to England and Ireland. I had to go over there for some Pilates business. And then I took a group of my friends and we stayed in all these haunted castles, down the center of Ireland and things. And it was funny because there was a hotel owner who'd been on all of the ghost shows and things. And he sat up with me one night and we, drank Irish whiskey by the fireplace. And he was just saying, well, some of this was kind of meant to stimulate tourism and things. And you hear that and okay, it does. It's interesting. And you can go back and look at the lore and find little bits and pieces. And the Uinta Basin is fascinating in that regard. There's a lot of, buried treasure and allegedly lots of different things. So,
but this has a real dark side to it, this particular place and the history of Skinwalker Ranch.
It does to me, but
I guess for people like us that have, it's like we kind of bought into the mythology, and there's a lot of people that still do buy into the mythology that's propagated on TV or propagated on social media or whatever. It's just kind of like, it makes us a little more jaded to believe any of this stuff.
It's so hard because I still think that there is a fascinating mystery that deserves to be studied. I've had things happen to me personally and I don't know what that was. I will probably spend the rest of my life going on a mission, trying to figure that out and trying to study it. And I think the thing that has really made me angry though is the fact that people can use the paranormal and ufology as a means to manipulate people and lie to people, make a living off of things so they can go on the circuit decade after decade. And there is a genuine mystery out there. And that is with the Skinwalker Ranch saga. I mean, that has really shown me a lot of things that I never wanted to see. And it's made me angry because I think I deserve better than that. I think other people deserve better than that. And we deserve to be empowered with what we experience and what we see and not manipulated by a few people who've, you know, created a bunch of nonsense over the, yeah. But, and it's the same handful of people as we know. So
in the time that we have left, Erica, I wanted to talk to you about, Chris Marks. Now this is someone that you met through the going out there to Skinwalker Ranch.
Yeah, I was introduced to him from Ryan Skinner. And so, yeah, that was interesting. So definitely a very sad chapter in my life, but hopefully that will be over with soon and I can get on and start to heal from that. That'll be good.
Yeah. And this is something that you had, I know that there's been like local Utah station has covered this and all that, but what has happened with that?
So right now he is charged with 3 counts of domestic violence and 1 for violation of restraining order. And it's been a really interesting and it's been a really hard, really horrific, the most difficult period of my life, because after I was victimized by being verbally and physically abused almost on a nightly basis, I, you know, got the courage to leave thanks to a couple of my dear friends who gave me that courage, and it was very frightening. And it still is, to be honest, but I left him and turned to, you know, the police and the National Guard for help, and found out that the National Guard would be absolutely no help. They would just protect their own. And that there was maybe a little bit of that taking place with the police. And it's been really hard. It's been frightening. It's been hard to try to recover from that level of abuse and to still be frightened and to try to be your own advocate, because people are not doing what they're paid to do as, you know, government employees. And so I'm, you know, it's been really special. But again, you know, I have to throw out there why he was employed, you know, at Bigelow for 10 years. He made it through, you know, several batches of firings, and he was always still there under Bigelow, really liked him and things. And so one wonders.
What were some of, I mean, he made some claims about the ranch. What were some of the claims that he said that happened to him? And do you still believe those claims?
Oh, no. I'm completely mortified that I actually had, you know, had, yes, I went down that rabbit hole. I did. And then luckily for me, during that time period, I started asking questions and saying, okay, wait a minute, things aren't adding up. You know, luckily for me, I'm very avid at recording things. And so I have a lot of that with his permission on tape. A lot of my questioning about things. In fact, the last podcast I did with him is pretty telling, because you can tell that I'm getting to that point where I'm just like, really, this is, I think that's really not accurate. But he felt, or his shtick was seeing a shape-shifting of a man on the ridge that was, you know, during a lightning storm, holding out his hands, and then did this, he bent over and turned into a wolf. And then he had another story about a pack of wolves coming towards to hit both of the dogs, the ranch dogs, you know, to himself, and one of the wolves throwing the dog up in the air. Interestingly enough, the dog didn't have any bite marks, but that's clearly a holographic, something was going on there. And that he shot the animal repeatedly and nothing happened to the animal. So, but, you know, again, it's that the same sort of tired stories that we've heard over and over again from that group of people. And it was, I think, an interesting thing for me to interview him from the beginning of my relationship with him, and to have several interviews out there in public so they can see that, you know, to begin with, he was very much, I love Bigelow, I love Kelleher, they're amazing people. And then as I started to find out more about it and do my own research and started questioning things, that's when he had to change, you know, his tune on things, which was interesting in and of itself. So.
And his function was primarily security. Mm-hmm. And through him, you really saw that prevalence of right-wing extremism amongst a lot of these folks.
Yes, I did. And that's something I never want to be that close to again. That was pretty frightening. So that was, that was a good time. And I definitely feel, as we discussed earlier in the show, that there are a lot of people, mainly the whole community is made up of people with these ideas. And I'm not saying, I mean, I was a Republican delegate, you know, I mean, I used to have a lot more respect for the party than I do now, that's for sure. But I think that overall, like you mentioned, this has been kind of a haven and the paranormal subject for some of these extremist ideas. And now I think that we've seen this complete manipulation of the subject thanks to social media and the internet and things, and that's used to shape people's ideas. And even though we're looking at UFOs, we're going down a rabbit hole that is, you know, instilling in us that we don't need vaccines, we don't need masks, you know, all of these ideas that, you know, Nazis are really great people, you know, things like that, that have been sprinkled in the UFO world for a long time.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it's unfortunately all over the place. And as far as like he was concerned, when he started coming out with these claims, I mean, if you could kind of speculate, what do you think the motivations were? Do you think it was just like an attention getting kind of thing, or just trying to kind of like, you know, because there seems to be like there's a lot of like people that want to just. They want to have a new shtick on something.
You mean as far as the ranch?
Yeah, or the ranch, or just himself, or like a self-promotion type of thing.
I definitely think, you know, there was that. But I mean, he was definitely, like I said, he worked there for a long time, longer than a lot of people. And so there, you know, what was the motivation there? I don't know, you know, so.
Do you think it kind of earned you points with Bigelow, maybe? If you're working for him and you have an experience to lend to the whole thing that he's building, pretty much. Mm-hmm. It seems like these guys were all just like sitting around, you know, role playing pretty much, and like figuring out ways they could just come up with bullshit.
I would agree. And clearly I've got lots of video of the stories of the ranch. So it's been an interesting ride. And like I said, I wish that I could go back to that place where I was, you know, this wide-eyed, you know, like curious person and wanted to, you know, go out and have these grand adventures. I mean, I still do, just not anywhere near that area, the ranch, because I don't know what's going on at the end of the day. But like I said, the Uinta Basin's a fascinating place. I loved going to Norway. I like going to different areas. I was in Southern Arizona with Ted Rowe, the director of NARCAP, a few years ago at a very, you know, allegedly, well, I feel kind of an active location for things. It was an ancient Native American site. I mean, it was just, you know, so there's a lot of mystery, but there's a lot of corruption. And how do we weave our way through that and not become so bitter and jaded that you want to toss every UFO book into the trash?
Yeah.
Not that I would do that because I love my library, but. You know, you do feel some days you just feel like, oh, wow. And it's an interesting learning process. It's like I went into this so foolishly and learned a lot of lessons. And now I can start to, you know, get a little roadmap of people, motivations.
Yeah, it's a window into all these different, you know, sociology, history, all this stuff for you.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Fascinating and disturbing. And empowering, all in one.
There is the phenomenon that I agree with you that has genuine mystery, but all these subjects seem to also be about a lot of other things. You know, it is disillusioning, but on the other end of that is like a lot more questions.
I think, you know, for me right now, having had that up close and personal experience with, you know, all of that, and having, you know, some other experiences that had nothing to do with him in my life with regard to the ranch and other people, it's been, yeah, that's been pretty hardcore. I definitely am, you know, it'll take me a while to get over all of that. But, and even, you know, the experiences with MUFON, I mean, there's a lot of, this subject can be really hard on people. I think it can be really hard on women. I think it's, you know, I mean, we need to step back and look at some of the larger issues if we truly want to make change. And we definitely need to question the agenda of To the Stars Academy and some of the people that are now emerging on the scene that are getting, you know, their pretty pictures in GQ, you know, little goatee and all that stuff. It's so cute.
And what are you talking about? Especially with the goatee.
Well, I mean, we've got a couple people with some facial hair going on here. Let's be real. But, you know, I mean, again, like I've said on my show many times, one of these days I will do a puppet show on ufology and life will be good. I can take all my, you know, the Bigelow Corbell puppet, you know, just, it'll be fun. I've been planning out the scenes with my friend.
No one's going to see this because we only record the audio, but she's showing us the prototypes right now.
I am. I mean, you could see my hands. Yep. But so, yeah, it's a trip. I don't know.
I think it's good that we talk about this stuff, and I think it's good that we dig into it. If you don't, if you're not critical, then you're just kind of like that true believer type. And it just doesn't... you see a lot of this on UFO Twitter, and we talked about a lot about this. I mean, I've talked to several people. I mean, Jack Brewer is one of them.
It's just I like Jack a lot.
Yeah, it just seems to be just the same thing again and again and again and again. And we go down this road so many times, and then you've got people that are, granted, they're new to it and they're hopeful, and they're just really, you know, UFO Twitter is just really just hardcore about like, we're going to get some kind of answer.
But from the government.
We never seem to do that.
And well, good luck.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, great. That's a noble effort. Elaine Douglas did that 20 years ago. I mean, there's been with Operation Right to Know. I mean, this has been, yeah, this is, you know, they did it in NICAP. I mean, this, it's, yeah, the common theme, disclosure is coming, the government will hand us stuff, and not really. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, just if you have a personal experience, hold on to that, keep it to yourself, maybe share it with a couple of your friends. Don't look to ufology to try to put it in a little box, because you're going to go down a rabbit hole that isn't in your mental best interest, you know, and things, and I don't know. It's just find a close group of people you can talk to about stuff and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And then be smart enough to realize there's a lot bigger picture, like you mentioned.
Right. Well, what is next for you, Erica? Do you talk about on your show, and how has that changed over the course of all this?
God, it's so funny. You know, and I've been doing the show for what, 7 years, 7 or 8 years. Almost every Friday night. Yeah, it's been fun. I have definitely taken a couple weeks off this past little bit because I've needed to recuperate from some of the personal things I've gone through. But I am, you know, I've become a true believer, and you've watched the process for me going to the School of Hard Knocks with MUFON, some of the abuse and things like that that I try to highlight. But I, you know, I mean, I kind of where you guys are. It's like I want to have a rational discussion about this. I want to expose some things that I feel aren't in people's best interests and have fun. I've got this wonderful archive here. So I'm archiving that and working on a book with my dear friend, Gordon Lohr, who was in NICAP back in the late 60s, and new professor, James McDonald, and actually just amazing man. And so working on that, and I've got a couple other projects and some, you know, TV stuff coming up and things. So I'll be busy, and we'll just see what trouble I can get into next.
Do you have plans for the archive?
You know, I'm digitizing the archive.
Cool.
And yeah, it's so cool to have, I mean, I've had several people donate. The most substantial holding that I have is Ann Druffel, who was a prominent researcher for many decades. And so I'm digitizing that. And then Gordon Lohr graciously donated his archive to me as well. And so I'm hopefully getting to the place where we can get things back to normal in Utah and we don't have 10,000 COVID cases a day.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can have people out here. I think, you know, I've had Nick Redfern out here to speak. He might come out again to do that if we can get things calmed down with that and just invite people here that are serious researchers and then eventually donate my archive to a university and that will be good. But that's my love. That's my baby. And I'm grateful for the friends that I have, like Barry Greenwood and Gordon, who have entrusted me with a lot and have helped me and schooled me in a lot of ways. So it's been very cool.
Awesome. Well, good work on that.
Thanks. Yeah, it's fun. Well, so hopefully someday we can go tour Skinwalker and then go give them some trouble, stand there, take some selfies, do what the tourists do.
Yeah, we'll come with you.
Cool. That'll be fun. They'll love it. Hi, boys.
Where can people find the show? And also, they want to communicate with you. Where can they find it?
Well, right now I'm hiding in a hole, but they could communicate with me when I come up for air. I'm on UFOclassified.com. You can find me. That's my website. I need to update it a little bit. My show you can find on YouTube, Facebook, or Twitter on Friday nights at 5 o'clock Mountain Time. And it's a 2-hour show and things like that. And then, yeah, that's where you can find me. So, and on Spreaker, I think, my old podcasts and things, I've switched to the video format, which I like. I've been really liking seeing people's faces now. So it's cool.
All right. Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Erica. This has been an awesome conversation with you. We really appreciate it.
Thanks. No, it's fun to finally have it. And so thank you for being patient with me. And it's cool. I like it.
All right. Well, guys, we'll be back to close out the show. Stick with us, Erica, and we'll be back on Conspiranormal. Okay, everybody, welcome back. That was a very interesting interview with Erica Lukes, all about Skinwalker Ranch and some other
not to be confused
things.
With Hidden Valley Ranch.
Oh yeah,
with that special blend of herbs and spices.
Skinwalker. I saw something on. I did see something on the internet earlier. Skinwalker Ranch dressing. I did see that.
I made that meme a long time ago.
The Skinwalker Ranch dressing.
Yeah.
So just very interesting, very revealing. I mean, this is one of those things that, like I said, has really was a big thing for me back in like 2005, 2006 when I read that book and I first heard it on like a paranormal radio show and all these type of things. And like I said, I mean, you know, you guys have heard me talk about the Warrens a lot recently in the last year. And, like, those are also some of the things that, you know, I've had to reassess and really relook at some of these interesting cases that I thought were just a given. But, like, the Skinwalker Ranch stuff is not a given. It's not all that it seems to be. And I think that that's important if we're going to be discerning in the media that we look at, and especially with the paranormal stuff. There's always some kind of just like foolishness going on and ulterior motives and all the time. I mean,
the
like
power of self-generating narratives.
And I mean, if that's not a conspiracy theory or a conspiracy in and of itself, I don't know what it is.
Even know? Though it's like on the surface, it's a negligible amount of Pentagon dollars, but You know, it's an operation. It might be cover for something else. It might be paying some other bills. Who knows what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, you know, like she talked about with Recluse a lot, I think the weapons testing stuff really, there seems to be something to that. And, you know, this probably relates to things like cattle mutilation and other stuff.
Yeah, I would say so too. And I mentioned the Cabazon Indian Reservation in there, and that's all part of the whole Danny Castellero, the secret team and all that. You can find that in Ken Thomas's book about that. But, you know, that's what they were doing. They were doing weapons testing out there in the Cabazon Indian Reservation because they could get away with it because it was considered tribal land.
And a homogeneous population,
right,
had cohesion. You could probably keep secrets there better. Just like
not very many people out there anyway.
Yeah, and just like there in Utah, I'm really curious about what the demographics are like around there. If like everyone belongs to the same church, like if they're all Mormons, or like what's the deal with that? You know.
Yeah, and I thought it was a good point that she brought up about that Skinwalker is a Navajo thing. It's not a Ute.
Yeah.
Belief.
Yeah, very different people.
Which is something that, like, nobody is going to actually look at, or nobody's going to investigate, and nobody's even going to really care about. But, you know, I think that that's important.
Yeah, and like I was saying, like, I think the branding is everything. Without that phrase inserted into it, it's, you know, a lot less powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if it was just called Hidden Valley Ranch.
Right, yeah, the Hidden Valley Ranch.
Or Ken Steakhouse, Newman's Own.
Well, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, and the Wikipedia article is actually really good, and you can find these links, okay, to a lot of this. But, you know, there were people that owned 1934 to 1994, and I believe Kenneth is the same as Garth that she talked about. Garth Myers owned the ranch for 60 years and never really had anything really weird happen out there for 60 years. And then all of a sudden these other two people own it. And then all of a sudden these weird stuff happens. And then Robert Bigelow buys it and owns it for 20. And this is interesting as well. I mean, just in the Wikipedia article itself, bought in 2017 by Adamantium Real Estate, LLC, a Delaware limited liability company based in Salt Lake City, Utah, filed a U.S. trademark application for the service mark Skinwalker Ranch on February 15th, 2017. That's where I got that information that I read earlier, and was approved and registered on April 14th, 2020 with a mark applicable to providing recreation facilities, entertainment services, namely creation, development, production, and distribution of multimedia content, internet content, motion pictures, and television shows. An additional trademark filing to expand use on cups and mugs, shirts and short sleeve shirts, sports caps and hats.
Where's the gear at?
Yeah, I know. Was filed by Adamantium Real Estate, LLC on June 21st, 2021, and is pending approval and registration.
You know, I'm in the apparel business. I need to land that account.
So, you know, Adamantium, like somebody's an X-Men fan.
Yeah.
Because that's what that's in reference to.
Yeah, pretty weird. But I mean, you know, it's these self-generating narratives that create economic growth. I mean, what would... You know, we recently went to Adams, Tennessee. What would Adams, Tennessee be without the Bellwitch?
Right, right.
What would all these places be, you know, without their foundational legends?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you know, Skinwalker Ranch is a foundational legend of the really late 20th, early 21st century.
Yeah.
Like, it's a brand new thing.
But it started the same way they did 100 years before, you know, with like... Yeah. These, you know, using journalists and newspaper articles.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So I guess the thing is just like, I guess that's another sacred cow that is kind of ruined for people out there. But, you know,
sacred mutilated cow.
Yeah. So, all right, guys. Well, that's it for this episode. I want to thank everybody for coming on. Thank Erica Lukes as well. So we have coming up Some really good episodes. Aaron Gullius is going to be back with us next time on Conspiranormal, and he is going to be talking about his new book about triumphalist conspiracy theories, and we're really happy to have him come back on.
Which we are both reading right now, and is excellent and highly recommended.
And then later on, we will have, we also, the next week, Serfiel and I are going to start a new series about the history of conspiracy theories. So you guys stay tuned for that. So we got a lot of great things coming up, plus an awesome presentation with Kiki Dombrowski that we will be pushing for the next couple weeks. That's coming up in the end of February. I believe that's February 25th. So guys, stay tuned for that. But also Patreon side, we're about to do a little news roundup show with Dr. Future, get a little update from him, and Serfiel can tell you where to find that.
You can find that at patreon.com/conspiranormal, where you can become a conspiranormalist too, or join the Mystic crew and get admission to all those Strange Reality streaming events. And if you are really dedicated to the cause, you can join the Ancient Circle of Strange Realities.
All right, guys, that's it. Join us next time. We'll have Aaron Gullius on Conspiranormal.
If you would like to help the show, please consider becoming a Patreon at www.patreon.com/conspiranormal or leave a one-time donation at conspiranormal.com. And please check out our YouTube channel, Conspiranormal Podcast.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.